Swing and a high fly ball, belted. First home run for Acuña as a tape measure shot in Cincinnati.
There's a deep drive to center field. Get up, ball. Get out of here. And gone. Home run number one for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
34 regular season home runs for the now 21-year-old Juan Soto. That is hit in the air to right and way out of here.
Hey, this is episode 7 of the Prospects 365 Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Ray Butler, your host. You can follow me on Twitter at Prospects365. Our guest today is none other than Matt Williams. He is the host of the Turn 2 Podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Williams, but the spelling is a little unique, so make sure you're paying attention. That's at Matt, M-A-T-T, Williams, W-I-7-7-I-A-M-S. How's it going, Matt?
Hey, pretty good. Very fitting that I'm on episode 7.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Matt Williams is not exactly the most unique name in the universe. So when picking a Twitter handle, it could be Matt Williams 178543 or something, or I landed on this, which I think is pretty cool. So now I have this new nickname. Everyone calls me in like sevens, like mostly in the fantasy football community, but baseball. So lucky number 7. Let's get this thing going.
Absolutely.
I think I tweeted out earlier.
On episode 7.
Talking baseball. It's so exciting. It always brings a smile to my face.
Absolutely. So before we started, we were talking this morning and you said, I believe the only thing that you really had to do around the house today is you were cleaning out your garage, correct?
Yep.
So is that kind of how you're handling the kind of stay at home, the quarantine, all of the amount of time that we didn't know we would have? Is that basically how you're going about every day, finding something different to do?
Yeah, now I'm just kind of running down the checklist of anything around the house I wanted to do. We moved like recently before this, before everything happened. So we have a bunch of things like just pictures and mirrors and things we want to hang up and things like that that we never got to. So, you know, now's the time.
Yeah, absolutely. My wife is, we're expecting and she's due in June. So a lot of this time for me around the house is, we're kind of converting our office into a nursery, different things like that. We're going on a walk every day so she can get some exercise. It's been really kind of pleasant. I mean, of course, the entire situation in general is unpleasant and it's sad and it's gloomy. We don't have baseball that we had been planning on having for ever since the last pitch of the World Series last year. But getting to spend that extra time at home, it's not been the worst thing in the world. So
congrats on the baby, by the way.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We're naming it's a boy. We're naming him Maddox after Greg Maddox. She is a gigantic Atlanta Braves fan. And we read that name. We were kind of trying to figure out what name we both like, and we kind of hit on Maddox at the same time. And at first she kind of thought M-A-D-D-O-X, but we very quickly kind of transitioned that to M-A-D-D-U-X. Of course, after one of the greatest pitchers of all time. How many episodes of the Turn 2 Podcast are we up to? Do you know off the top of your head?
No. We actually, me and the host that is not on as much, I'm usually on with John MLB Moving Averages. I actually started it last season with FF Stompy, Sam Lane, but we only did some in spring training, and then we were too busy to do it during the season, but now we're, you know, doing it full time for this year. I don't, you know, honestly, I don't know, like maybe 20, somewhere around there.
Gotcha. John is, he has had a fantastic offseason and preseason as far as his following on Twitter goes. Of course, he is in New York, one of the hotbeds of COVID-19. I've kind of talked to him a couple of times every week, just checking in on him. It is certainly tense times where he lives, and I can kind of sense that when talking to him. He's had a great offseason as far as he, of course, The Athletic added him. All of his content on Twitter has been fantastic. And speaking of, I was kind of drawn to the Matt Williams Twitter handle with the 77 instead of the LL because of the player breakdowns that you have been doing on Twitter this offseason and preseason. We were talking off air. We think that you were up to about 56 total breakdowns of players. So where did you get the idea? I also want to know, as you're talking about it, how much time it takes you to create each breakdown. Just kind of take us through your process, if you will.
Yeah, as far as how I got started, I can't really remember as much. I mean, I'm a feature writer for Fantasy Pros, so I can put content there, but it just seems more and more like people, I don't want to use the word lazy. I don't want to use that word. People don't like to, as little steps as possible to get content in front of them. So I thought, you know, I wanted to do something fun and free just to interact with people and just talk baseball online. Cause like I said, baseball is fun. So I just wanted to do like a quick player breakdown right online, because I want to teach people how to use sabermetrics and how not to, because a lot of people do things like they'll throw out a popular one is like for hitters, BABIP. I'm like, oh, he had a high BABIP. They look at Yan Makana. He had a high BABIP. He's going to regress. And that's not the case because of the way, the kind of hitter he is. I do a whole profile on him. You don't necessarily look at him versus, you don't look at BABIP for what the player did versus league average. You look at what the player did versus what his average is for a career and the reasons behind it. Same thing, home run to fly ball ratio. The league average is like, I don't know, 12 to 15%, depending on the year. Some people think like, oh, he had a 30%. Is that going to come down? Not necessarily. You know, I mean, if you're hitting the ball like, you know, Yordan Alvarez, Nelson Cruz, Joey Gallo, you're going to be able to live up there. Some people, 8% isn't low. It's kind of where it needs to be. So just, there's a couple of examples for hitters, which is where I started. So I just picked Oscar Mercado out of the thin air. I think for a while I was just putting a few examples online, having people vote for what they wanted next. And yeah, I just take the full 25 post Twitter maximum for a thread. And I take a look at every single metric you can have through Fangraphs, Statcast, and through scouting. I just watch the video and I go through and show people what they did, why they did it, if there was actually tangible changes made as far as mechanics or approach, and you know, show people what to expect going forward. Because again, another thing with that is some people just use rankings or ADP as a crutch, which is, you know, a big mistake. A lot of people are kind of growing a little more hip to that. I see roster construction is thrown out a lot as a popular term now, where people are trying to be smarter about the way they build their team. So it was just a fun way to educate people. So that's why I got started with them. And it just kind of took off. I was doing one a day for the hitters for, I want to say like 45 straight days. And then when this took off, you know, when this kind of happened, the, you know, the COVID, it kind of took the wind out of people's sails. People, you know, weren't as, you know, didn't know what to think. So I kind of pulled off from the one a day for a while. And I actually started doing pitchers, which those take a lot longer. You know, you got to look at video. There's, you know, you can look at Brooks Baseball. There's, you know, there's spin rate, there's velocity, there's pitch mix. There's a lot of different things to look at. So hitters, I'd crank out once a day, usually staying up in the middle of the night, like, cause I couldn't sleep, and just like doing them between like, you know, 10 PM and like 2 AM or 3 AM. But the pitchers will take me like a couple of days.
So the thing that I was drawn to the most out of what you just said, and it's something that I can connect to immediately, is not all batting average balls in play are built the same. I see this, and other prospectors throughout the industry, I would assume, see this. The first prospect I think of is someone like Jeter Downs, who was the headliner of the return in the Mookie Betts, David Price trade to the Dodgers. The Dodgers sent Boston Jeter Downs. Jeter is a heavy pulled fly ball guy. That is the way that the Dodgers have been able to maximize his power output, is he pulls the ball frequently and he elevates the ball frequently. So I have a lot of questions of, do you think Jeter Downs on base skills are going to increase, dot, dot, dot? It seems like his BABIP was a bit unlucky last season. Well, it wasn't unlucky. If you look at his pull percent, if you look at his fly ball percent, he's always going to be one of those guys. I think in my prospect list, I compared that part of his game to Jose Ramirez. Jose Ramirez is never going to tear it up from a BABIP standpoint, because he generates his power poolside and by elevating the ball as frequently as possible. You're not going to have a 350, even a 330, perhaps not even a 320 BABIP when that is your game. So I definitely identify with what you're saying as far as that goes. I will say that your threads of your player breakdowns has been one of my favorite kind of Twitter series of the offseason and the preseason. I feel like it wasn't that long ago that you were kind of crossing the 5,000 Twitter follower threshold on your personal profile, and now you're even closer to 6,000 followers than 5,000. That is a testament to the way you kind of conduct your profile on Twitter, and it is a testament to the hard work that you have put in this offseason and preseason.
I appreciate that. I think I started the offseason with only like 2,000, to be honest. So, like, yeah, it took off like crazy. And like you're saying, I brought up BABIP, a home run to fly ball ratio. But, I mean, there's every single profile I do is very different. Some I will focus very heavily on things. Sometimes I'll go the other way. I bring up standard deviation for launch angle, which is something not a lot of people know about for like guys like Nick Castellanos and Eduardo Escobar. Because you'll look at, you know that basically is the spread of where your launch angle is. Because you look at a number as a whole, like Franmil Reyes has everyone assumes has a really low launch angle, which is weird for a guy who hits such titanic home runs. But if you actually look at his launch angle throughout the season, it zigzags up and down. So he's very inconsistent hitter, which with his low contact rate could be a horrible problem for him. But you know, if he, you know, he's still a young guy, he could get better, you know, and he could lead the league in home runs if he can get any of that straightened out. But then you guys like Mike, Nick Castellanos, who he's actually been one of the best hitters in baseball. We all know he's like a line drive machine. He like had like an immense amount of doubles last season. But he actually is getting worse in that department of leading the league in the standard deviation and launch angle. And he's actually coming back more and more and more to the pack. So everyone in I went into the, he's a good example of someone I go into the thread expecting to have a certain view. And it kind of changed my mind where obviously going from Detroit, you know, he stopped in Wrigley for a little bit and going to Cincinnati, you assume everything's going to be fantastic, but I actually see enough regression coming where it evens out. So everyone hoping for a giant bump. I'm not quite there with everybody now after I've broke it down. I still think he's good and I think his ADP is completely fair, but he's not one of those people that where I think he's going to get this massive jump. So it's just a player by player. It's completely different and everyone kind of has their own narrative, which is fun.
Like you're saying, not only is it kind of an exercise to educate your followers, it is an exercise to also educate yourself. And that's one thing I can certainly relate to. The deeper you dive on a player, the more you learn that you did not know. It impacts the way you prioritize a player in fantasy drafts and things like that. One thing I was recently drawn to, your breakdown of Sonny Gray. Mm-hmm. And you said, and I, of course, I'm not, you're not on trial at all. I'm genuinely interested in your thoughts. You said that you want him to throw his four seam less.
Yes.
When you say that, how much would you like the usage to decrease when you say something like that?
I'm trying to pull him up there because I want his numbers as far as his pitch mix in front of me. I wouldn't mind if he didn't throw it at all. but that doesn't actually make any sense because there's some players like Shane Bieber who obviously get crushed with their fastball because – you know, but their whole thing is like pinpoint control and he uses his break and stuff to get over. But you obviously need the fastball to pace everything. But if you kind of looked at the Sonny Gray, he started out his career really rocking and rolling in Oakland. He gets traded to New York, doesn't do well at all. And then you have Cincinnati who trades for them and signs into an extension before he throws a pitch after doing very poorly in New York. And it's because they saw a problem with what New York was doing with him and they wanted to change up his pitch mix to use his breaking balls more. So if you just kind of look into what he did last year, he had like a big jump in K percentage. Swinging strike percentage went up a little bit. Called strike kind of stayed the same. So, and his fly balls went up, his ground balls went down. So there is interesting things to look at that worked and didn't work for him. Because when I went into this, I didn't think that this was something I was necessarily going to believe in. But you look at his four-seam fastball, He used it 28% of the time. A lot of people use their fastball most of the time. And sometimes when people do pitch mix, they throw sinker and four seam together. 28% for four seamer, 19% for sinker. But obviously there's a big difference between how they go. People batted 319, batters batted 319, slugged 546 with a 227 ISO against his four seamer. Only a 6.8% swing strike percentage, which usually you don't get a ton of swing and misses on a fastball unless it's an elite one. So 6.8 isn't horrible, but it's not good. His sinker, though, 9.1 swing and strike, 236 batting average against, and a 122 ISO. Obviously, you're not going to get a lot against a sinker by nature. It's a ground ball pitch. But, you know, his curveball, his slider, even his changeup were just magnificent pitches. And his, his four-seamer is just something that gets barreled a ton. It wasn't working really well. The Wobakon, weighted on base and contact was 428. So everything that kind of worked for him as the season went on is when he started kind of not like erasing the four-seamer in lieu of his breaking pitches, but using his four-seamer less and working in his sinker more. Because if you're not going to get, if you're throwing a four seamer that gets barreled all the time and there's no swinging and missing, what purpose does it really serve unless you have pinpoint control like Shane Bieber, which he doesn't have? So I think if he's going to rely on throwing his breaking pitches for strikes, it looked a lot better when he started leaning on that sinker, because worst case scenario, if someone makes contact, you're probably looking at like a ground ball or some weaker contact rather than people barreling you up. So that's something I would like to see, because everyone thinks the Sonny Gray could be like maybe take a step forward, even be even better than last year. And there's some people that think he's going to take a step backwards. I think if we see the pitcher we saw last year, there was a lot of regression as far as how hitters actually took advantage of his break and stuff. He got a little lucky when it came to contact. It'd still be very good, but he would actually regress as far as the numbers suggest. But if he starts that trend, if he continues the trend of using the four-seamer less and the sinker more, I think it could make all of his pitches more effective just across the board. And I think there is another gear that he could take. And that's kind of like the assumption that I came to at the end of the thread. I think I projected him for, I'm looking now, 3.72 ERA, 1.24 whip, 26% K rate, which doesn't sound fantastic, but if he kind of changes his sequencing and pitch mix and kind of goes forward, which is completely reasonable because they obviously, they're always looking to improve. I think that there is another gear here that could really make him dominant because, his most dangerous weapon against him is that four-seamer, and he just needs to throw less.
That is fantastic insight. So last year, the four-seamer usage was 28.6%. The sinker usage was 19.6%. Is this something do we need to meet in the middle somewhere around the 23, 24%? Do you want to see those usages flip-flop? What do you think the best route of attack is?
I'm actually pulling up for anyone, by the way, a lot of people, while I'm doing this is actually a good example for me to bring up. Everyone's wondering, where do I get my information? And I said it definitely depends, depending on the player you were looking at. Pitchers, a lot of people love looking at Fangraphs and Statcast for most of their data for all players, but I think I mentioned it earlier, Brooks Baseball is like the best resource, in my opinion, you can possibly look for pitching, because you can find, like I said, you can see the percentage of pitches thrown. You can see month by month where it changed. You can look at pitch velocity. You can look at release point. You can look at vertical and horhorizontal movement. And that's where I go to find anything like that. And also there's Alex Chamberlain's leaderboard for anyone that doesn't know what that is.
Fantastic resource.
It's not loading right now. No offense, Brooks Baseball. A lot of people are using it. They've had some server issues because obviously a lot of more people are looking. So I can't get it to load here, which would have been good. But yeah, I don't even necessarily know if I want it to be met in the middle. I would be fine with him bringing down I think I'd be fine with him bringing down his four seamer use to practically nothing. Because there's a lot of people, like I said, you don't want to take it away completely because you want to change speeds and keep people honest. But what is it? He throws the four seamer for 93.3 miles per hour. He throws a sinker for 93.1. So it's not a big difference there. So he threw that 28% of the time, the sinker 19% of the time overall. At minimum, I would love to see those numbers flipped, which is, that would be a ton of two-seam fastballs, which a lot of people have been moving away from. But if you're not going to be able to elevate your four-seam fastball much in order to take advantage of the speed difference, which, you know, 93.3 miles per hour, you can't. So, yeah, absolutely. I would love to see that almost flipped and, you know, see the sinker at least 20%, at least like 25, 26, 27% of the time. And the four-seamer, I would love to see under 20. I think that should be maybe his four-seamer should be his fourth pitch.
He's a pitcher that I've been targeting. If I'm late on starting pitching early in a draft, he's a guy I've been targeting as kind of a low-end SP2. If I'm tracking as far as my pitching goes in fantasy drafts, he's been someone that I feel pretty good about selecting as my third starting pitcher. It was interesting that you brought up the kind of the change in plan of attack as far as the breaking balls go. I specifically remember an Eno Saris article, I think it was prior to last season. It was kind of addressing what went wrong with Sonny Gray in New York. And he basically said that Larry Rothschild, who was the Yankees pitching coach at the time, I think he's now the Padres pitching coach. His kind of ideology is he wants you to throw your breaking balls for strikes more often than not. And I believe, if memory serves me correctly, in that article that Eno published, Sonny basically said, I cannot thrive if I'm throwing my slider and my curveball in the zone. And if you look at his zone percent, it decreased from his time in New York to last year in Cincinnati. So I just think Derek Johnson, the pitching coach for the Reds, he was kind of able to optimize the way that Sonny attacked pitchers. Watching and kind of monitoring the usage of the sinker versus the four-seamer, as you kind of harped on in your player breakdown and on here, of course, I think will be something worth monitoring. Of course, hitters will make their adjustment to the way Sonny attacked them last year. Perhaps his counter attack will be throwing the sinker more and throwing the four-seamer less. If you notice the title of this episode, it is the Love Triangle. Matt and I have a fondness and a love of the same pitcher, and it is a pitcher who St. Patrick's Day, you can get outside of the top 450 picks in your draft. That's according to NFBC. That pitcher is Danny Duffy. Matt, why are you so drawn to Danny Duffy this preseason?
One, I love to grab hitters early in drafts because I really love deep diving into pitchers, and I love to get them late because I find you can always get good value. And I'm not one of those people that are like no starting pitcher. I actually like to put an ace in the bank. So you usually see me putting someone in the first three or four rounds in the bank, and then probably someone like by the time I get to like the seventh round, I at least have two. But then I love taking deeper guys, so I'm always looking for this. But Danny Duffy, everyone knows his name because you knew that he used to be very good. Around was it 2016, and then just the wheels completely fell off. People kept going to the well. He dealt with some injuries, and he just hasn't been the same. He was throwing in his best. He was throwing 96, 97 miles per hour. Then that dramatically dropped down to the 93s and below at certain points, but 93, 94 miles per hour. Last year, he was throwing like 92, 93. He comes in this year, and his velocity is and his in spring training that is usually lower when people come in was at his career peak. His slider, he actually picked up all-time velocity. He actually picked a couple of ticks up on his slider, and everyone, when I posted this about – because I posted this online, everyone's like, well, don't you want there to be a speed differential between slider and four-seamer? I'm like, I don't really care too much about that. I know that you want there to be a little bit of a spread. I'm more concerned about that when it comes to like changeup. Because if you can have the slider, you know, coming out at the same release point as a four-seamer, it doesn't necessarily matter what the spread and speed is, because if there's going to be movement, it's going to definitely mess up the hitter because they can't tell the two apart. So he comes in with the fully healthy, best shape of his life. He comes in with that career high velocity, and then he comes in against, I believe it was this, correct me if I'm wrong, was it the Cincinnati Reds?
I believe
in
so.
In his first start, and he goes in against the A team. Every single player, every single starter was in there. And I think you have these stats in front of you. I wish I did. I know I tweeted about it. I'll look it up right now before turning it over to you. He threw, you know, I can't remember. He basically threw, he had like something like 8 or 9 strikeouts, and like 7 or 8 of them were swinging. So it was just, he really looked on top of his game. So he's going to be the opening day starter, if not the SP2 for the Royals, and that deep in drafts. Innings pitched are at a premium. So, you know, if you can get someone, if he even bounced back even halfway, I'm pretty excited. So, yeah, he's someone I definitely have a ton of shares of.
Yeah, in 2 spring training starts, he had 6 innings pitched, 4 hits, no runs, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts. His ADP, as I said, since St. Patrick's Day, is 466 on NFBC. He is someone who I've been targeting anytime after pick 400. I have jumped ADP by about 40 spots in places just to make sure I roster him. I believe on the NFBC, let me double check. I think I'm up to 5 shares on redraft leagues of Danny Duffy. On the NFBC alone, I think I have another in a Fantrax redraft league. He's someone, you kind of touched on it with the slider. He kind of reinvented that pitch. It was one of his best pitches already. Last season, his changeup had a 15.7 swinging strike rate. His slider had a 14% swinging strike rate. So his slider was already one of his best pitches. I believe reading up on his offseason, he wanted to alter that pitch because he thought it was getting hit a little bit too much. The slider had a 247 expected batting average last season. He added some velocity. He kind of changed the shape of the pitch a little bit. Mm-hmm. Of course, spring training stats are spring training stats. Of course, the early returns are really good. It's also, he used the pitch 26.3% of the time last year. Most of the time, I am anti-altering your pitch usage drastically just because I think that pitches play into each other, and I'm a big fan of the way that we tunnel and sequence certain pitches off of other pitches. But I do think his slider was already so good. I think if he wanted to change it, to me, I'm assuming he's going to throw that pitch more this season. He already threw it 26.3% of the time. It wouldn't surprise me if that usage increased into the 30s this year. So he's not someone I'm necessarily banking on as one of my starting pitchers that I draft, but I think he is going to have back end of standard fantasy rotation viability this season. He's pretty much my game plan with him in drafts is he's either my first or second starting pitcher to draft in the reserve rounds. And I'm mostly talking from a background of draft championship leagues. So yeah. I draft 6 or 7 starting pitchers. I draft the rest of them are closers, of course, in my starting lineup. But then he is my 7th or 8th or even 9th sometimes starting pitcher. And I really, really, really like him in that spot. Someone is going to win games in Kansas City. They're not going to be a very good team. I do think the AL Central is one of the weaker divisions in baseball. And I said this on the SP Streamer pod here recently. Of course, you do not need to evaluate individual pitchers by using pitcher wins. But you also have to have pitcher wins to win roto leagues. And I think if any pitcher in Kansas City is going to do that this season consistently, it could be Danny Duffy.
And you said you grab him late. You know, there's no investment involved. But he's like literally he's become a must-draft player for me in terms of I always want him because I think the potential there is so great for the price being zero that I bump him up because at a certain point in drafts, what around like round 10 – ADP, say when people say ADP goes out the window, which, you know, whatever, ADP doesn't matter. Go by your own rankings of what your team needs are. But the term actually ADP goes out the window is like after like 15, where literally you can draft anyone from who should be drafted according to ADP to like pick 700, pick whoever the heck you want at a certain point. And as soon as it gets to that point where I literally am just, you know, picking, you're just kind of picking whoever you want. I definitely make Duffy one of my first people. I did look it up. I exaggerating how well he did against the Reds, but their entire, someone who's picking to win the division, the Reds had all their starters in. Six, he went four innings, struck out six, five swinging strikeouts, and the sixth one was frozen on a curveball. He looked magnificent. So yeah, he's definitely, I love the boring guys. Like you said, someone's got to win games. Another person I know where I'm just changing gears a little bit, just someone similar is Masahiro Tanaka. People are really down on, but he's kind of free where he's going. And he had a horrible year. If you look at his year long stats, he looked terrible. His four seam fastball again is someone he probably shouldn't throw it. It's really bad. But his secondary pitches are really good. And the splitter is the thing that kind of ruined him last year. People were just destroying it because of a lot of people know because of the new basketball fast or the new baseball last year. Most people that threw sliders like Edwin Diaz, Noah Syndergaard, that was one pitch that suffered, but a splitter was another one. He said he just couldn't get a feel for the pitch, and he did at the end of the year. And if you actually look, August, September, October, he started to come around and his numbers started to look up because the splitter started working, which allowed him to work off his other pitches. So he's another person, again, boring back end starting pitcher. It depends on, it obviously depends on how you built your rotation until then, whether you want risk or safety, but it's just another person where I think that if things go right for them, their ceiling, the return on investment for where you draft them is much higher.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the fact that you said, I don't know if these were your exact words, but you basically said that ADP doesn't matter. ADP has never won anybody a fantasy championship.
Nope.
Ever. ADP does not win fantasy championships. You going out and getting your guys in your own valuations, that does win fantasy championships. And it's like you said, at a certain point, I'm just going to get my guys. And if you look at my player shares on NFBC, on Reddit recently, when I was publishing my high-value pitcher list for this season, I had someone comment that said, why do you include guys like Danny Duffy and Daniel Norris and Asher Wojciechowski and Trent Thornton? Those are my guys. And, he made the comment
that – Trent Thornton, yes, by the way. I'm fully on board.
He made the comment, these guys are not going to be rostered in any type of fantasy format. And, I kind of hit him back with, the draft championship format, whether that's best ball or the DCs on the NFBC, those are kind of the most quickly growing format in fantasy baseball. And if I'm right about those guys, not only are they free in fantasy drafts, they're going to help me cash at the end of the season. Because we've had guys like Luis Severino, who's out for the season with Tommy John. We've got guys like Chris Sale, who's out for the season with Tommy John. They're not going to be the end of your kind of your redraft studs who miss a chunk of the season, regardless of when we start due to injury. It's then that guys like a Danny Duffy, it's a guy like a Trent Thornton, those guys are the ones that you feel really good about, that you make sure you have on your teams, that you plug in, and they become assets in your fantasy rotations. The last thing that I want to talk about with you, Matt, is Chris's, the Baseball Pod's Fantasy Baseball Podcast Tournament. The Turn 2 Podcast as a 6 seed was fortunate enough to – I think you dominated your first round matchup, didn't you?
I wouldn't say dominated. We were against Fantasy.
Stop being modest.
Six pack. And I don't know what we ended up winning by. It was like 60-40-ish or something. It wasn't too bad.
So you move on to the second round. As a 6 seed, you are going to be taking on the Cinderella Story Upper Decker Podcast, which is a 14 seed. They beat the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast?
Yeah, the reigning FSWA best podcast. I don't know what's going on with this thing, but yeah, Upper Decker has definitely got the pixie dust sprinkled on them at the moment. So I'm terrified. But the good thing about this thing is I was honest in the fourth round. I hadn't heard of half of the podcast, which is, if you listen to Chris, the guy who runs Baseball Pods, that was kind of the idea of this there's 64 podcasts in here. It's your opportunity, especially now when people have nothing to do, to go out there and listen to something new. So I went in and I listened to the Upper Decker podcast because I'm like, who are these people that are about to upset Yahoo? So yeah, it's very interesting. You had yourself a tough first round.
I did. We are a 10 seed in the Yelich region. We were matched up to the SP Streamer podcast. Of course, a huge following there, a very loyal following. When I podcasted with Ralph a few nights ago, Ralph Lifshitz from Prospects Live, we talked about the fact that the volume of votes in our contest with the SP Streamer, I believe there were over 1,100 total votes. That's a testament, of course, to the following at SP Streamer. It's also a testament to the Prospects 365 following as well. It was just a fantastic first round matchup. Both sites and both podcasts were really into promoting our contest. It was something that I kind of kept pulled up throughout the day. The last couple of hours were really nerve-wracking because they continued to kind of narrow the margin and narrow the margin and narrow the margin. I think I ended up winning by a total of about 80 votes or so. And now us, a 10 seed, we have the enjoyment, we have the pleasure of going up against a complete titan of podcasts in the Athletic Fantasy Baseball podcast. They are a 2 seed. We are going to give it absolutely everything that we've got. If we don't win, we don't win, but it's not going to be because we didn't try. But like you said, the reason that I wanted to talk about this with you is, number one, you do a fantastic job of promoting not only your stuff, but kind of, quote-unquote, your guys' stuff as well. People who are kind of acquaintances and friends with you in the industry. I'm lucky enough now that I consider myself a friend of yours in this industry. You do a really good job of promoting this type of thing. And I know that Chris was recently on the Turn 2 podcast. I enjoyed listening to that episode. He has done a fantastic job of, like you said, kind of shining a light on podcasts that perhaps a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah, and we went over it on that episode. If anyone wants to hear more about what Chris does on the Turn 2 podcast, we had about a half hour to 40-minute discussion with him. But he highlights. He doesn't really review. He listens to the entire podcast, and it's all positive. Like, you know, I guess if he doesn't like one, maybe he doesn't put it out there. But there's nothing ever negative. He posts what he listened to, and he gives a few bullet points without spoiling the episode of what to expect. And which is good. Sometimes you won't hear about a podcast. You won't know what exists. He'll shine a light on them and he'll kind of let you know what to expect. So if you see a topic, you're like, hey, that sounds very interesting. You actually can go in and listen to it. He links it right from there. So yeah, Chris does a really fantastic job.
He does. And it's worth echoing. Not only did he have a fantastic idea with this tournament, but it was kind of a perfect storm. Everybody's inside. Everybody has more free time than we initially anticipated. Now is a perfect time to kind of expand the number and the type of podcasts that you listen to. I know on the episode of the Turn 2 podcast that you had him on the other day, y'all kind of dove into the different types of fantasy baseball podcasts. You've kind of got your dynasty-centered leagues, your prospect-centered leagues, redraft-centered leagues, analytical podcasts, that type of kind of differential and variance even in the small niche that is the baseball podcast community.
Yeah. I mean, you can listen, you listen to Prospects 365. If you guys are really going down, deep diving on some prospects, and then, you know, you turn two, we'll have one where we literally going completely nerd on everyone and explaining deep analytics. And then you can turn on the, hey, it's Enrico Palazzo podcast, which if anyone never heard of it, that's just full on enthusiasm for as long as they're going. They're not as like deep into stats, but they love baseball and they are like so into it. So it's like you can have three very different experiences and learn something from each show. And it just kind of keeps it fresh because, you know, if you're going to listen to like a few different baseball podcasts, you don't want to be hearing the same thing or the same style. You want to, you want it switched up.
Absolutely. So we have talked about Matt's 2020 player breakdowns. He's up to at least 56 total player breakdowns. And Matt, plug it, because I didn't write this down and it's my mistake for not doing so. If followers and listeners do not want to scroll through your timelines to read those player breakdowns, you have archived them somewhere, haven't you?
I have. The fastest way to find it is if you just follow me on Twitter, again, Matt Williams, MATTWI77IAMS. It's the pinned tweet on my profile. There's a link to ffmercs.com, which is this fantasy sports mercenaries site that I created. It's just basically for anyone who needs help with their rosters and drafting and something. You can, you know, have one of us, Casey, Bubba, Curlin, SP Streamer, we're all there. We can help you out. But here nor there. Yeah, click on the link and every single one of them are on there in alphabetical order. You click on it, it'll take you directly to the thread. If you're not into threads, there's actually, I wish I had this prepared, but there, if you just type in like thread converter, Twitter thread converter, there's actually a free service that will, you just reply to them with like a link of the thread and they'll actually spit it back to you in article form, which is pretty cool. So if you have trouble with that. And there's also the hashtag 2020 player breakdowns you can click on and you can scroll through. But yeah, the best thing to do if you want to find them is to just go to my Twitter page and it's the pinned tweet.
Absolutely. So do that. That's ffmercs.com or as Matt said, his pinned tweet on Twitter. So we talked about the player breakdowns. We also kind of dove into a couple of individual players there, including Sonny Gray. We have talked about our shared love, a love triangle, if you will, with Danny Duffy, who you
can. And apparently Trent Thornton.
And Trent Thornton, yes. Yeah, so it's kind of a love rectangle, love square, I guess.
Hey, is that you, because you go through prospects, is there anyone that deep? Like we say Danny Duffy's free. Danny Duffy's not free. Trent Thornton is free. Is there anyone going that deep in draft that could potentially have like 4+ pitches if he works it out?
No.
I mean, he's one of the most intriguing people that's free, right?
And that is something like, of course, your standard league people, Danny Duffy is free. In draft championship and best ball formats, Danny Duffy is certainly not free. Mm-hmm. Like, so that's been something I've had to kind of bite my tongue a couple of times when people mention ADP that far. But no, as far as Trent Thornton goes, just a kind of a massive arsenal. I think he kind of consolidated. I believe I read some this offseason. He was kind of the front runner for the last spot in the Blue Jays rotation. Of course, the AL East is always going to be dawning. The Red Sox are a little bit lighter now that they don't have Mookie Betts. But where I can draft Trent Thornton, I'm not even sure of the ADP off the top of my head. It is 551.69.
His min max is probably like 300 picks apart too.
Yes, his min is 456. His max is 634.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that is a little bit less than a 200 pick differential. But he is someone who I am not going to have any issue plugging in to my fantasy rotation if I get punished with injuries, if I am punished with ineffective pitching by someone I was banking on in my starting lineup, a Danny Duffy, a Trent Thornton, even an Asher Wojciechowski, who I can draft even later than a Trent Thornton. Those are guys that I think are going to help people win fantasy baseball championships this year. So we talked about, I guess, instead of a love triangle, it has now turned into a love rectangle, a love quadrilateral, if you will, between Matt.
It's a rhombus.
Between Matt, myself, Danny Duffy, and Trent Thornton. We have talked about how much fun the Baseball Pods Fantasy Baseball Podcast Tournament Bracketology has become. Make sure you support both the Turn 2 podcast. Is your day Monday or Tuesday of next week?
Tuesday. Every week we have at least one new show every week on Tuesday. And then, you know, we obviously do our trivia nights and whatever, our random bonus podcast. But yeah, every Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday night, we'll have a new episode out.
Absolutely. And do you happen to remember what day next week we can vote for the Turn 2 podcast in the bracketology?
I believe if they go in the same order that they did by division, he said, Chris said that round two of the thing is starting on Tuesday. So I believe Wednesday, we will be up against the Upper Decker podcast. Please vote for the Turn 2. We greatly appreciate your support.
Absolutely. So vote for the Turn 2 podcast. You said it was next Wednesday,
I think.
And if it is next Wednesday for him, that means it will be next Thursday for Prospects 365. We are a 10 seed. We are very kind of a fly on the wall compared to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast, who is a 2 seed. It is your quintessential David versus Goliath matchup.
Rock the vote. It's your duty, everybody.
Yes, we would absolutely love your support if you enjoy the Prospects 365 Fantasy Baseball Podcast and the content that we continue to pump out despite the fact that baseball is currently shut down. Matt, anything else you would like to promote before we head off?
No, just I love everyone being positive about baseball. If you're one of those people that thinks they're not going to be a season, just keep it to yourself. We all want to keep positive. We all think we are hoping there's going to be a season. Everyone stay positive. There's going to be baseball. I know it. Just keep positive.
I absolutely agree. I'm still banking on sometime in July. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, and I'm definitely like you. Only positive vibes sent my way. He is Matt Williams. You can follow him on Twitter at MATTWI77IAMS. I am Ray Butler. You can follow me on Twitter at Prospects365. This has been episode 7 of the Prospects 365 Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We will talk to you soon.